Good afternoon. Right, I know you've just had afternoon tea, you know, and it's 3:30. Oh, it's the wrong time of day, and it's day two. You've had a lot to do. But just a slight amount of audience participation to get us started. So, Victorians in the room, let me hear you, please. Yes? New South Welshmen and women? Queenslanders. Ah, so a few locals, that's all right. South Australians. Yeah. Oh. West Australians. Yeah. Northern Territorians. William Webb Ellis trophy stealing Kiwis. Couple. Anyone else from overseas? Just a couple. Righto, that's good. Taswegians. Feeling left out. Sorry, guys. Norfolk Island. Okay, what I will ask you to do, just give me an idea of industry sector, if we can, please. So those in the public sector. Show of hands. Yep. Okay, financial. Thank you, Dwayne. Construction, engineering, yes. Education, a couple there as well. Academia, retail, resources, yes. Public safety and emergency services. No one? Health, close enough. Health, yeah. Excellent. Okay, so a good spread. That's pretty good. Sorry if I missed out on you. We'll make up for it later on. In a previous life, I worked with the Department of Emergency Services here in Queensland. And it was very interesting, particularly talk about disaster management and the effects of climate change on what's happening. So classically, they would take an approach of planning what they were going to do, preparing for it, responding to an emergency, and then going into a recovery effort afterwards. So they were basically adapting to a change. But what we've found with the acceleration in climatic events and the increase in severity of those, we're almost always on a status of being responsive, or at least in the preparation phase. Anyone impacted by the floods here in Queensland over the last 5 or 6 years will know what I'm talking about. That 1-in-100-year event that in some places in Queensland has happened 3 times in 3 years. So what we're moving towards is a stage where it's no longer the case where we get time and we're going through these stage changes. We're actually operating at a time of continuous change. We'll talk about that a bit more later on. Key points that I want you to take away today, and this is basically the whole focus of what I'm going to talk about. Technology is an enabler. The focus we need to have, and particularly as IT professionals, is what are we trying to enable? Because unfortunately, far too often we can get caught up in the enabler. And we know that we have to deliver these things. But by delivering those things, what are we enabling? And how are we ensuring that the effort that we've gone to is actually providing value and is following through? Getting beyond deployment. Okay. So what does success look like, though? Well, it does depend on who you are, and what role you're playing, and what involvement you have with the activity that you're doing. So I'm sure a number of you in the room could probably align yourselves with one of those roles up there at the moment. And each of those will have a very different idea of what success looks like, because of the responsibilities they have. So in some cases, they'll say, yep, we got the business case approved. Sweet, excellent, job done. Or no, we've activated the tenant. We've got all that sorted. Or hold on, we've actually got the users in there. And we've done some migration. Excellent, fantastic. We've trained everyone on how to use it. Sweet. And the first person has finally been able to sign in and do something. but was still not over the finish line, was still dropping short of actually reaching the potential of what we've delivered and achieving the business outcome. Now, some challenges we face is that usually, if it's run from an IT perspective, the scope that we set is only the scope that we have control over, which may be design the architecture, high-level design, detailed design. Let's do that UAT. Let's do that testing. Let's get it deployed. Let's get it up and running. But until we get over that finish line, we haven't been successful. So, okay, what does success look like? Success is usually the case once we have adoption. Now, that can be a bit of an amorphous word, adoption. What does that mean? But what we get to is saying, okay, well, adoption is actually equal to habitual use. Now, we're not talking about drugs here. We're talking about the fact that people pick this stuff up and use it in their day-to-day lives, and they're able to get stuff done. It is enabling a business outcome. So, what I want to talk to you today is a few things about how you can improve your chance of being successful, of actually moving forward beyond deployment into adoption, into people actually picking this stuff up and using it. There can be a variety of reasons they're doing that. So, the initial part of this, I'm just going to go through some facts and figures, basically from ProSci, which is a research-based change management model that we at Microsoft both adopt internally ourselves and which we deliver to our customers. So in here we talk about the research is showing this, that the major factors that lead to the successful implementation of a change, of reaching adoption, active and visible executive sponsorship. Number one, the big kahuna. Leaders in the business practicing what they preach, getting out there and telling people this is the way that we want to work, this is the new way of work that we want to adopt, this is where we're going and this is what we're doing. Actually having a structured change approach. I'll talk a bit more about that later on. Dedicated resources and funding. So having been involved with a number of deployments over the time, I'm sure you've never experienced the case where we've got to the end of the project and we said, look, in order to deliver 100% of the requirements, we've had to cut into some other budgets. And we're now just going to do some self-paced user guides and, yeah, just some fact sheets that we're going to put on the desk. We're not going to do training anymore. We're not actually going to take people on the journey because we've run out of money. And we find that that's an impact that we have. So making sure that that resource is dedicated. I was involved with a global engineering firm called Parsons Brinckerhoff a number of years ago where I was the knowledge manager for that particular organization. And we implemented a new version of SharePoint, funnily enough. We went from 2003 to 2007. We went from 9 intranets to 1 intranet. And we ran that project as a change management project, which had technical components within it. But the main aim of the project was to deliver benefit to the business where they're able to share and find what they need to do their jobs. And the technology was then plugged in underneath. But the overarching project was run as a change project. Frequent and open communication, employee engagement and ownership, very important to involve people both in the design and in the delivery of what you're doing, so that they get buy-in, they own it, because they will then defend it against any resistance that you find in the organization. Project management integration. So it's not one or the other. It's both. Project management and change management, needing to operate in an integrated manner. And in particular, support from middle management, because that's where your champions will come from. What we find is that role in the business has the most influence. Blockers, the risks that we face. So the first one, ineffective sponsorship. In particular, later on we'll talk about the difference between project sponsorship and change sponsorship. and understanding that and being able to work with it. Resistance to change. I can't tell you how many times we hear from people that, no, our people won't resist this. They'll love it. We'll just go and deploy it. We don't need to manage resistance. We even get the stage with one customer I've worked with, is, can we not use the resistance word, please? Can we call it something else? Because that's got a negative connotation. But you need to plan to deal with resistance. Yes, you might deliver and you might not come up against too much, but it's better to have prepared just in case. Insufficient resources, a division between project management and change management, I'm sure you've never seen that, wanting to drive in two different directions, and resistance from middle management. So if you don't get it right, if you don't get the balance right between change and project management, these are the impacts that you'll see. So an impact on the budget, delays, a loss of individual productivity. People are lost. Hold on. Should I be using the old one? Should I be using the new one? Declines in morale and attrition. You get turnover. You won't achieve the benefits that you set out to achieve. You get negative impact on customers and low levels of adoption. So we end up with a whole bunch of white elephants. I'm sure that's not the case for any of you here today. Yeah? No. It's all fictional. Hypothetically speaking. So what is change management? And again, we'll go from a definition here that's used by ProSci. So it is a structured approach, a set of tools for leading the people side of the change. Again, we can change the infrastructure, we can change the comms, we can change the environment, we can change the desks. Oh, we're going to move to activity-based working. But we need to deal with people's behaviours. We need to deal with their beliefs. We need to deal with their level of engagement and getting on board. At an organisational level, again, strong focus on a leadership competency for leading change. It's not just the one-off, it is you need to build that capability in your leaders and in the way you deliver projects to manage the change. Increasing that capacity for change and responsiveness, because as I said, we're moving to a state where we're in continuous change. Classic example, Microsoft Office. Office 2007, Office 2010. Office 2013. Anyone seeing a pattern here? 3 to 4 years of a change that comes. And in some cases it's a big change, in some cases it's a minor change. But hey, yeah, we've got plenty of time in between. But now with Office 365, you've got updates and changes and improvements in capability and functionality happening in a smaller time frame as every 2 weeks. So no longer the case where, yep, we can set people up with the new version of Office and we can all rest and relax now. Oh, I'm glad we got that done. Yep, move on to the next one. Continuous change happening. And it's leading to continuous opportunity. More and more capability being delivered, more and more opportunity to create value from the investment that you're making. So, 5 tenets of ProSci. For those of you who've been involved in this space, you should recognize these. There's got to be a reason. We can't just be changing for change's sake. And particularly what we've seen in the technology, we need to upgrade. That's great. Why? What's the reason? Well, it's not supported anymore. Okay, but what's the business reason? What's the impact that we can get? The change requires individual change. As we see with number 3 there, it's the collective result. So it's a whole bunch of individuals actually changing and improving that result in an organisational change. And we've got to help people on that journey themselves. We need to talk to them at a personal level. It's an enabling framework for managing the people side of change and applying it to realise the benefits and desired outcomes. So it helps you actually achieve the ROI that you're targeting, the value that you originally set out in your business case to deliver. It helps you get there. It helps you be more successful. So, affectionately known as the PCT, Project Change Triangle. They need to work together. Leadership and sponsorship, project management and change management, all working together to achieve the business outcome. The reason why you embarked on this journey in the first place. So meeting objectives, finishing on time and on budget, but also realizing that value that we set out to achieve in the first place. So when we're taking people on their own personal journey, there's a couple of stages we take them through. So we talk about what's called ADKAR. They need to have a level of awareness of what's going on. You can't just drop it on them. You need to then show them the what's in it for me. Generate the desire and show them, hold on, this will actually benefit you. If it's not benefiting people, why are you doing it? So there needs to be that value proposition there. We then need to give them the knowledge to be able to cope with the change. And in turn, that gives them the ability to deal with it and actually execute on it. And then after we do it, we need to consistently and continuously reinforce the behavior. Reiterate. It's not just a big bang. We need to say, no, we need to stay on this journey. And if anything, keep iterating. Keep moving forward. What we also find is only when you get to the ability stage with people are you actually starting to get a return on your investment. It's only when they get to that stage. So if you've got awareness, yes, we're letting everyone know why we're doing this, what's the business value proposition, what's the individual value proposition. We've raised desire, they're all interested, they like it, they're all on board. We've told them how we're going to change, given them the ability to do that, given them the knowledge. But until we actually get to the ability stage here, it can all fall apart very quickly. You end up going backwards and you end up in a worse place because they're then non-responsive to change. They've been burnt. Hold on, you said we were going to do this. I was very interested in doing this. But what happened? Where did it go? You've now delayed it for 6 months. So the impact of that, understanding the right time to engage with people, to raise the level of awareness and desire with them. And then moving into reinforcement. After ability there. So what we talk about is the impact of change. And what you want to do is minimize that impact. You want to get people back to being engaged and productive as quickly as possible. So in here we talk about three levels. A level that I'm comfortable with, that I feel secure. If I don't get out of that level, then I'm fine. I'll pretty much well stay as productive as I currently am right now. But if my warranty, if I get down to worry and uncertainty, I'm disengaging. My productivity is impacted. I'm not being as effective as I was before. But if I get too disengaged, then I don't want to work here anymore. And if I'm a high performer and a talented individual, it will be very easy for me to go and find work somewhere else. So if they stay too long, if they go too deep, they will leave. So what we want to try to do here is minimize the resistance, leave the productivity at a higher level, and do that in a shorter period as possible. So get back to being productive. Depending on how you do it, so for example, if the first communication or rumor, when people usually find out about what's going on through the grapevine, different activities and different tasks can lead to different pathways through this. But also, different people in different roles in the organization can travel on different paths despite having the same change, the same communication, the same training. Which, we can see some departments there coming back up to productivity, some taking longer to do that. And you will see an impact on performance of the organization because of that. And in some cases, total disengagement, where you'll get higher levels of turnover, particularly for the valued employees who are those high performers who your competitors are very easily able to go, thank you, we'll take them. So we need to be aware of these things. So we've mentioned a couple of times about a sponsor and the difference between the sponsor of a project and the sponsor of change. So when we talk about project management, what we're usually talking about is we'll have a business owner in here somewhere, and we'll have a single sponsor. And who's that person usually, the sponsor of the project? Who's that usually? It's usually the person who's paying for it. Yeah? Person who owns the cost center that the budget's coming from for the project. And again, from a technology project perspective, yes, that all works. We have a sponsor who's the benefactor of the project, who's funding it. We have a business owner who will be the owner of that application system, whatever it happens to be, once it is deployed. But it's a different story when we talk about change. You're not going to get away with just having one. What we actually need to do is enroll others as part of that sponsor cohort. So we need to have strong leadership across the organization, one part of the PCT triangle. The leadership there, the sponsorship there, to be able to ensure, reiterate, and reinforce the change that we want on an ongoing basis. So it may be that that business owner is there as an executive sponsor, but they need to help influence their peers and their superior in getting them on board and engaged. You'll see why this happens, or this is needed for some of the data that we've got here. So, data collected, I think, from 2008 to 2013. I think there's a 2014, is there? Some data coming out soon. 2016, the next one's happening. So, over these years, they've asked people, they've researched with a number of organizations globally and said, okay, when my sponsor is extremely effective and is doing what they need to do, we've exceeded our objectives. 85% of the time. So the more engaged and the more effective our sponsor is, again, the larger the likelihood of us being successful in what we're doing. So when we talk about those senior leaders in the business as sponsors or as champions, we're asking them, okay, what are they struggling with? As the role of a sponsor, what's the problem? Why are you not able to deliver in that capacity? So what we've found is failing to communicate effectively with employees, failing to build that coalition of involving their peers and actually sharing responsibility for the change, and fail to actively and visibly participate, to be walking the talk, to practice what they preach. They need to be the role model of that change. Now, when we get down and then start talking about managers and supervisors, again, who need to be involved as part of our change network in delivering change, they face challenges as well. And one of the key ones we've found here is the ability to be able to manage resistance. How do you engage someone who is disengaged? How do you get someone on board who hasn't bought into what's going on? And again, we need to help those managers. We need to coach them. We need to help them as champions of our network to be able to help deliver the personal change that's going on. Now, one more in here. Really interesting comparison here. So, in blue is the effectiveness of the business message. This is the business intent. I want to clearly articulate this is why we are doing this from a business perspective. People are most responsive when that message comes from the chief exec or from an executive director at a senior level. That's what they will respond to. They expect that message to come from that source and they will react to that appropriately. But when we talk about personal change, they will be more responsive to that coming from their direct manager. And this is where we sometimes get the disconnect. Sometimes we've got the CEO trying to talk about the personal change. And if we look at Gray, from a CEO's perspective, very little responsiveness to that coming from that person. But then we have the manager trying to talk about, oh, well, this is why we're doing it as this organization. These are the objectives we're trying to achieve. So the blue for the employee supervisor in there, quite low. But even more scary is the fact of these people here. These people are usually and traditionally the people who would be sending out the comms and the messages. Yeah? The comms specialist working on the project, coming from the project team member, or from the project leader, or from the change management team member, or from a change management leader. Less of an impact. Yet that's how we've been operating. So that's some of the facts and figures I just wanted to give you to set the scene, so to speak. Now what I want to talk to you about is some practical advice. So this is from me as a change practitioner working in the sector and passing on some advice for you. So, things I'll cover off. Nobody's average. I used to use an analogy that no one likes vanilla, but then someone tweeted me some research from the States that said vanilla is the most popular flavor in the world. So I've steered clear of that one. Getting beyond thinking about change management as comms and training. Very important. We'll talk about that a bit. And enabling a new way of work. So focusing on that business outcome as opposed to deployment. So if we look here at a group of people, which we might divide on the horizontal axis as divisions or location, and the vertical axis as the maturity. So their maturity in relation to this new way of work that we're adopting. Okay? What we find is, funnily enough, no one's average. No one falls on the line. And yet, from a cost management perspective and from an efficiency perspective within the project, we only want to send out one message. We want to minimize what we have to do because we've only got a certain budget. So we might divide this up into regions and sections, but even within those regions, we see there's a diversity of maturity. So what we find is one size does not fit all. If we go with the one change program rolled out to the entire business as vanilla, we'll put the same posters up everywhere. We'll send out the same comms to everyone. We'll run the same events and activities, whether they're a metropolitan office or a regional office or a rural and remote employee. We're just going to roll out vanilla. But one size does not fit all. So what we can do here is consider offering flavours. Choc chip. Bubble gum. And maybe some Hoboken Crunch. Although I do like the Choc Rock. That's a good one as well. So we might look at this and say, okay, how do we deal with people of a low level of maturity, a medium level of maturity, or a high level of maturity? And what I'll tell you now is those people with a high level of maturity, you don't need to support them much at all. So as an example, if we were deploying Office 365 in the organization, for those people who are early adopters or even innovators, all I've really got to do is say, there's the goalposts. Don't go outside of there. But knock yourselves out. Keep an eye on them. But you don't really need to support them much because they have a high level of maturity. They may have used social tools in another organization before and gone, yes, we can use Yammer and run away. Where we go. But people at different levels might need more help. So a lower level of maturity might need something more intimate. They might need some hand-holding. Down in that nursery, we might need more of a focus, and we might need to spend more time. But I'll tell you now, you'll get some of your best stories out of that nursery. Oh, we've implemented these new tools. And the marketing and comms team is going off like a frog in a sock. They love it. They're doing this, they're doing that, they're doing that. And the rest of the business says, well, of course they're doing that. They're those kind of people. They're not us. They're different. But when you come and you say, right, we've taken some of the Luddites in the business, and I'm going to apologize for this in advance, but in a previous customer, it was the IT infrastructure team. Very tried and true in their ways, not open to collaboration or sharing. I know exactly where my stuff is. No one touch it. But if you can take them just from 0 to 1 or 1 to 2, it's a fantastic story to tell the rest of the business. Because the rest of the business turns around and go, you did that with them? Imagine what you could do for us. So you actually get better stories out of spending more time and attention with those people who are at a lower level of maturity. What's more, you'll probably create more value in taking someone from 4 to 5 will be less valuable than taking someone from 1 to 2. So depending on what you focus on and what you need to do in there. But what's also important to understand is for people's own individual journey, for them to reach a stage where they have the ability to deal with and adapt and adopt the change, they're all going to be moving at different speeds. So it's not the case to say, right, we're going to run a 6-week training program and everyone has to participate in this 6-week training program. But some people are on leave and some people have got other commitments and some people have got meetings and that. But that's when we're offering it. Sorry, those 6 weeks. That's it. You can't fit that. Sorry. So we may need to be more flexible in allowing people to move at different speeds of change. Yeah? Still awake? There's a few people just... Yeah. What's in it for me? What have you done for me lately? The personal value proposition, very important. Helping people understand how it will help them. Not their manager, not another part of the business, but what's the impact on them? If it doesn't have a positive impact on them, there's even more work you need to do. Okay, you're now going to be asked to do twice as much work. Why? Oh, so we can pull that data together and give it to someone else to use. So there's no value in that for me, yeah? Well, not really. So we're going to need to take people. You want to motivate them. You want them to be happy to do that work. Because hopefully there is a value proposition in it for them. You might be able to relieve them of some other duties to allow them to cater for that increase. Okay. This is stuff I'm working through at the moment with a couple of clients, and it gets pretty funky. But as we talk about, again, that individual value proposition, we also then talk about, well, what's the value to the team? So the people that I work with, upstream and downstream of what I do, what is that value there? But also then, we as a team then deliver a service or a capability to our internal customers or to our external customers. And in particular, we ran a very interesting workshop most recently with a client in Sydney where we then said to them, okay, now you have an understanding of what Office 365 is. Which tool would you use at each of these layers? Because again, one of the most common questions and requests we get from customers, Office 365's got a lot of stuff. Which tool should we use when? But what we need to do is take the business on that journey and get them to identify what is going to work for them. Because there's a whole bunch of different possible permutations and combinations there. Should I use a Yammer group? Should I use an office group? Should I be using a distribution list? Should I be using a team site? By working with them and understanding, again, personal productivity, how do you work then as a team? Because I might need to change the tools I use. I have my own personal preference. I will use my iPad Pro. but the rest of my team might be working on a different desktop environment, might be storing stuff in a different place. So I might need to adapt my personal productivity to be able to work with other people. And then if I want to work with the customer, so I talked with an executive in an IT support role in a large organization in Australia who had gotten up at a conference internally in front of a few hundred of the senior leaders of the organization and basically said, Yammer sucks. Social, nah, not having a bar of that. Don't know why we're doing it. So he went, funnily enough, the project manager who was leading the Yammer implementation pulled that person aside pretty much well as soon as they stepped off the stage and said, we should catch up and have a chat. And through the conversation that we had, this person basically was thinking at their personal level, look, I've got my RSS feeds, I've got my DLs, I don't need social, it's just somewhere else I need to go to catch up, I don't need that. So we're not going to use it. So we said, okay, can understand that. As an individual, you don't have a value proposition for using social there. But as your teams run the service desk in the business, do you believe there would be benefit for that virtual team that's across three different states to have a common area where they can use a social platform to collaborate and talk to each other and share ideas? Oh, maybe. Okay, to engage with your customers, would you see the ability to use a social channel to talk to your customers and have them ask you questions rather than lodging a ticket, but to be able to find answers and ask questions in a social environment, do you think that would be good? Oh, hell yeah. 3/4 of our organization's on Yammer. They're all my customers. I should really be where they are and talking to them. So this person, had a second coming and said, righto, well, let's give this a whirl. And they're now using it as a channel for their help desk within their organization. And it's proving quite successful. He's still not using it himself, but he sees the value at a group level and at an organizational level. So he actually has a desire, but not a personal desire. Change at multiple speeds. So at the moment, we've just recently designed an adoption strategy for an organization, and we're trying to adapt to the different levels of maturity. So what we've worked on is a general adoption campaign in the organization. Early adopters, innovators, just pick this up and run with it. Away you go. But what we've then said is we're actually going to run these uplifts where we're going to identify either a specific scenario in the business that we can enable or a geography or a department that we will focus on for that period of time. But at the same time, we're going to run these one-month sprints. We've got three streams of work going on. One is a continuous stream, one is 3 to 6 months, the other one, 1 month initiatives, where we're going to target high potential, high value areas of the business, and again, take them from 0 or 1 to 3 or 4. Focus that and create that value for them. Now, traditionally, when we've probably done the adoption, we've just done the one up top. Hey, we'll do some comms and training, and we'll put up some posters, and we'll send out some emails. E-learning, your people can just run off and do that when they want. So the change is that we want to get beyond that. So if we start on the left, classic solution deployment. The scope for our project is to deploy this, is to make sure it's robust, it has the uptime, it's been tested, the users are in there, the permissions are appropriate, it's all done and dusted. It's ready, it's supported, it's maintained. Go and work out how to use it now, where you want to go. Okay? Hopefully that's in the past. What we're dealing with at the moment is a transition between the next two stages. So comms and training. Yep, we're going to send out some emails, we'll put up some posters, we'll have some lunch and learns, and then we'll do some classroom training in a sandbox environment with dummy data. Does that sound really accurate? Okay, first of all, I'll talk about the theory of specificity. So what specificity says is, if you want someone to learn a new behavior, a new activity, You should be teaching them that in an environment that is as close as possible to when you want them to execute that behavior in real time. So it's one thing to teach a person to hit a tennis ball up against a wall, and they'll probably get pretty good. The hand-eye coordination will pick up. They'll get strength in their arm, and they'll be able to move around a bit, get to the ball. But if I then want them to perform in the first round of the Australian Open, I haven't really prepared them appropriately, have I? So if I'm asking people who might be a mobile workforce to come in to a classroom environment using a desktop PC in a sandbox with dummy data, it's pretty much well as far away from reality as you can get. So we want to move closer. We want to focus on that business change. So here we talk about achieving the business value. The business value, the business outcome should always be front of mind. So the outcome isn't that, hey, we've got 99% uptime. That's good. That's great. Maybe 99.99, for those who want to get into it. But is it getting used? Whilst it might be available and have all the data in it, are people actually using it to do their job better? To close more deals? To reduce cycle time? To improve customer satisfaction? To improve staff engagement? We need to keep those factors front of mind. So they're through the sponsors and champions and leaders working with the teams to identify the personal and organisational benefits and communicating those effectively. But realising that benefit through those focused activities. And they might be short term, they might be sprints, they could be 3 to 6 month projects. But focusing on a specific outcome and enabling that specific outcome. So what I want to talk to you and share with you is the approach that we take. So yes, we use ProSci as a background to manage our change, but we actually have an adoption focus in what we do. So, we work with organisations to set that vision and identify those business scenarios. What are the key areas that we can enable in the business that you can uplift performance to get an improved outcome, to achieve success as an organisation? Mapping usage scenarios to create the adoption plan. So, okay, we've identified these roles in the organisation. We call them personas, and they're archetypes. And they might be a field worker. They could be an office worker. They could be a senior leader. They could be a call centre operator. But we then map those around those scenarios and work on the adoption plan. Now, what's really important here is some of the things we design. So particularly from a training perspective. So say, for example, one of the scenarios we've wanted to utilise and uplift is running better meetings. I'm sure everyone in here operates in an organisation where you run fantastic meetings, yes? You just love rocking up because you know this is going to be productive. Yeah, we're going to get some stuff done. Maybe. So there is opportunity to improve that, to uplift that, to make it more effective. In some cases, to reduce it. In some cases, you may want to increase it. But we want to run better meetings. Now, traditionally, if you do that at a simplistic level, okay, generically, well, let's show you how to use Skype. And that's where people stop. But if you were to run an effective meeting, you need to create an agenda. And you need to involve people in the creation of that agenda so they have buy-in. Now, when we then invite them to the meeting, we might do that in a variety of different ways. We might share the information through a OneDrive or a OneDrive for a group. We might then execute that, yes, in a Skype meeting. But we might record that Skype meeting because some of our team members can't come, and we might make that recording available in our Office 365 video portal through a private channel just for our team. But during the meeting, we've also got a shared OneNote where we're taking notes, we're marking attendance, we're tracking action items. I can create those action items in OneNote and actually have them created as tasks in Outlook that get assigned to those people. I've taken those minutes, but at the end, some people like to have a copy. So within OneNote, I've used the share via email. Email the page. And before people get back to their desk after the meeting, they have a list of the discussion items and the minutes from the meeting and the action items in their inbox waiting for them when they get home. Plus, there's a link there if you want to go to that shared OneNote, I can go back and get them. So we probably talked about 5 or 6 different tools there that enable that new way of work. And the training you design is around, here's how to run smarter meetings. And there might be some training in there on what's a good agenda look like, or how to take good minutes. And it might be interspersed with, oh, and by the way, here's how you do that in Outlook, and that in Skype, and that in OneNote. But the focus is on that new way of work, because that's what you want to adopt. So we don't go and say, here's some Outlook training, here's some Skype training, here's some OneNote training. We say, here's how to run smarter meetings. Learn how to do that. And if you want to know more about Outlook, okay, we might have some e-learning material that can complement that. But the primary focus needs to be on that scenario, on uplifting the business outcome. Committing those resources, executing on the plan, again, as we saw before with some of the success factors and the challenges and the risks associated with achieving success on a project. But also, most importantly, measuring the impact. Did it make a difference? What metrics did we agree on up front? What performance did we want to improve? Did we want to improve cycle time? Did we want to reduce costs? Did we want to increase value? How are we monitoring that on an ongoing basis? Because again, if you're delivering stuff and you're not measuring if it's been successful and had an impact, how do you know when to stop or when to do more? You've got to be monitoring that on an ongoing basis, because you might say, hey, let's uplift these 6 scenarios initially. And then for our second phase we go into, 2 of those we need to do more work on, but we're going to bring another 4 in. And keep working your way through the business. Particularly the shift we're looking for here is it's not just around the initial implementation of Office 365. Lighting it up is only part of the outcome you need to achieve. And yes, when we light it up, we can identify and prioritize these 5 scenarios that we want to go and deliver on. But once we've done those, I'm pretty sure you could find another 5, and another 5, and another 5. I ran 10 workshops with one particular business unit in an organization, and we identified 60 use cases for using Office 365 tools that would improve the productivity of that business. We then prioritized 5 off the first rank that they agreed upon, and then they added 2. So their first phase of rollout is 7 scenarios that they're enabling. And they've identified one of those scenarios is very specific. It's using Power BI to make better decisions and do reporting for finance. So very specific outcome there they're looking to achieve. But others is, hey, we want to enable people to work from anywhere. So we want to enable OneDrive for 4,500 staff. What it's also giving feedback to IT is saying, okay, we can't really light up these work streams within Office 365 one at a time. Because if this scenario, if I want to enable this scenario that needs 4, I'm waiting 12 months before you get all 4 of those work streams enabled. So if we see the value, the benefit in enabling this business outcome, can we please light those 4 up as quickly as possible? Because that will give us the ROI. It will give us the business benefit. People familiar with this word? Okay, I'm sorry to say it's been hijacked. If people use the word solution in your workplace at the moment, what are they usually referring to? Installation, application, software. A system. Sorry, But according to the Oxford Dictionary, solution is a means of solving a problem or dealing with a difficult situation. Does not equal tool. Does not equal application. Does not equal system. So if you really want to provide a solution, again, you need to go beyond deployment. You need to get past that and say, to solve the actual problem that we're experiencing in the call center at the moment isn't just about giving you a new tool, it's about you using that tool to achieve an outcome. Similarly, I have a classic one I refer to consistently. Worked with an organization where collaboration was a strategic outcome. So here it was, up in lights. We want to be a collaborative organization. We said, that's great, but what the hell does that mean? Because collaboration is a means to an end. It's not the end in itself. We want to be more collaborative to achieve what? To improve customer service, to reduce cycle time, to improve our supply chain, to be more economic about the investments that we make. Something that happens to achieve something else, to achieve a business outcome. Do we do all right there? You got a good shot? Excellent. That's good. I'll just get one for my mum too later on. So I want us to take back the word solution. And I want us to deliver solutions to business problems. Can we do that? Okay, Corey, just hurry up, will you? I've got another session to go to after this. Is that a good idea? Yes? What will happen if you are then well known in the organization for delivering solutions to business problems? What do you think? What are some of the things that could happen? If IT is recognized by the business as solving business problems, what would happen? Now, that is a good thing. The next time you go back and ask for a budget, you've got cred. You've got skin in the game. You've got evidence to say, look, we are actually helping deliver on the bottom line to the organization. And I'm not talking about helping deliver on the bottom line because we've gone to Exchange Online. Okay? Massive misnomer. Oh, if we do Exchange Online first, yes, it's a foundation piece in going to Office 365. But to the users in the business, there is little to no impact on what they do. Because they still get their email, whether it's on-premise or in the cloud. Minimal business impact. Yes, we might be saving some money and doing all that kind of stuff, but minimal impact, positive impact to the business. So, I need you to go and work on solutions for business problems. So we need to get past the delivering a solution to actually delivering new ways of work. Improvement to the business to be more efficient, effective, to either reduce costs or increase the value from the costs that we do have. So in focusing on new ways of work, probably I'd say 5 years ago, we would have traditionally moved from right to left. Yeah? We would have probably started with the tech and then worked out a way to use it. But what we find now is we have to move from left to right. We need to talk about who is it in the business? What activities do they do? How do they work? We need to identify what they actually do, the activities that they undertake, the scenarios that they're involved in. From there, we can then work out, okay, yes, we can look at their device profiles, and we can then look at the capabilities and the applications and the licensing they need to do that. But we need to start with the business. Anyone here ever emailed a client a business requirements document and said, please fill it in. No, we've never done that, have we? Here's the form for your business improvement request or your initiative request. And what we find is our clients don't talk that language. Requirements, what do you mean? What is a requirement? But we need to work with them and take them on the journey and say, okay, well, let's identify the types of workers you have and the work that they do. Now, could we improve the way they do that work? What opportunities exist? And how can that new way of work be enabled by new... I had a prize, but I don't know where it is. It's in my bag. New technology, new tools. So again, we don't start with the tool, we end with the tool. We start with the business. We identify the opportunities. We identify the problems. So when we talk about personas, we talk about what people do, how they do it, why they do it, when they do it. We talk about where they do it. And most importantly, we talk about who they do it with. Because again, we find, on average, some of the research is telling us, you will work with up to 150 other people in your organization in a 12-month period. That's 150 different people that you will interact with. Some people it's more, depending on the size of your organization. But you will need to interact with that many different people. So who is upstream from the work that you do? What you deliver and produce, who do you give it to? Who is downstream? So who is giving you the information you need to do your job? And how do we ensure that you guys are both using the same kinds of tools, the same formats, you're communicating in an effective way and consistent way that allows you to be more productive? So those scenarios, future ways of work, improved ways of work. Let's identify what are the benefits of doing this differently. What are the metrics we're going to use? What's the actual change that needs to take place? And sometimes the quantum of that change is quite important, because you might easily be able to step over a gap that big, but if the gap's this big, we might need to put a step in the middle to get you there. So there might actually be a transition that you go through to get to that end goal. What skills and knowledge are you going to need to have the ability to affect the change? And then finally, what are the enablers? What tools can we use to do this? And it's very hard, it's very hard. I was talking with a team in a financial institution recently, and they said, can you just demo the products for us? Just show us that Delve thing. We haven't quite worked that out. Can you show us that? I said, look, what I want to do first, I want to ask you, what do you guys do? What work do you do? What do you do? Oh, we do this, we do this, we do this. Okay, well, how do you do that at the moment? Well, you know, someone rings up Joan. Joan will then send an email out and ask, you know, who's available to do stuff. And then, you know, they might get around to it eventually because everyone's pretty busy. And then they might pull some stuff together. They'll probably have that on their own desktop. They'll work on that themselves. They'll take it home. They'll work on it. And then they'll sort of, they might ask someone for feedback, and then they'll deliver that to the client. Okay. So how can we improve that? Do your people work all in the office? No, actually, we work from a couple of different offices, and we're pretty flexible, and we sometimes want to work from home. Okay. Any constraints that you have at the moment? Well, yeah, we can't actually work from home because we can't dial in, or when we do dial in, we've got a, what are we going to do? We've got a token, and we've got a VPN, is that what it's called? Yeah. And then I've got to do this, and then there's some another factory or something. I've got to do multi-factory authentication and stuff, and it's just too hard. So we give up. Okay, what if we could improve that? What if we could allow you to work from anywhere? What if we could allow you to share that information selectively or as a whole? What if we could allow you to collaborate on that document at the same time? Co-authoring. Yes, everyone's loving co-authoring. Yes, that's fantastic. I don't need to tell you the statistics show the amount of time where you're actually in the same document as another person working on the same paragraph. You're better off going and buying a lotto ticket. It doesn't happen that often, but when you do need it, it needs to be there. We got 15 minutes to respond to this request from the Director General. We need to work on that document together. None of this track changes, email stuff going on. Co-authoring at the same time is a need there. But again, enabling that new process, that new activity, that new way of work by using technology. Make sense? Yes? A few nods? Or is that just nodding off? It's been a long day. Okay. So, we mentioned before, we need to move from a sequence of change to a state of constant change. So no longer are you going to wait 3 years or 4 years to get the next version of Office. It's now coming. Consistently, constantly, the new version is there. It's going to happen to a lot of other products as well. So what we need to move to, and some of you may be familiar with this term, is what we call evergreen. Those have heard the term before, yes? A few? Okay. Basically, what it says is we're going to keep an eye on the roadmap, we're going to keep an eye on the future, we're going to see what's coming. What we're then going to do is say, new feature coming there, excellent, that'll be out probably in about 3 to 6 months. I'm then going to go back to the business and I'm going to look at those scenarios. I'm going to say, hey, remember how we did that scenario and you guys said this was good and we're doing that, but we've now got this new capability which could actually remove half a day out of that process now. Can you imagine taking that to the business and saying, hey guys, we can save you half a day. Being proactive, going to the organization, knowing what they do, and being able to advise them, hey, there is a better way of work. This is coming. We can then prepare and have the change ready to execute and happen. Because there's some changes that will come down the line that you don't get a choice. Now, a lot of them will mainly do with the back end on Office 365, but some of them will be Office Groups, Planner, Clutter. So a lot of these tools will be introduced. There's one introduced recently, I don't know if people have noticed it, but if you're using Outlook online in Office 365, so if you're using it in the browser, and you see a preview for a OneDrive document, you used to just get a link. Now you get a thumbnail. You actually see what that document is in the browser. Again, it just happened. You didn't need to make a change request or go through a change review board for that to happen. Some things you will. But again, unless you're keeping an eye on what's coming down the pipe, you need to be prepared. So, we'll go to some questions in a second, but key points I want you to take away. Please remember, no one's average. One size does not fit all. Okay? For change, a sponsor is more than a benefactor. More than the person paying the bills. We need a number of sponsors if we want to affect change in the business. It's more than comms and training. Now again, in some simple instances, yes, comms and training might be enough. But if you are dealing with major, complex change, it's more than that. But keep that focus on delivering the business outcome. Not the technology outcome, the business outcome. Because it's an enabler. Make sure you focus on what you're trying to enable. Thank you. Righto, how do we do the Q&A? We use microphones or anything? No? Righto, who's got a question? I was going to say you can't leave until someone asked the question, but the horse has already bolted. Thanks, guys. Anyone? Yep. Oh, sorry. Yep.
What do you do when the business comes to you and they've already got a solution in mind?
I was at a conference the other day and they presented this fantastic new business intelligence tool. Well, I read it in a magazine on an airplane. Or even worse, I was talking to a mate of mine who works for that other company over there, and they got some real good stuff.
Depending how much they get paid.
True, yes. So again, the question needs to come, what are you trying to do? So the trust that you can build through delivering business outcome then allows you to have a different type of conversation. So you're able to say, okay, that's good. There's an assumption that's been made that this fits what you're trying to do. But what is it you're actually trying to do? What's the business outcome you're trying to achieve? And by taking them on that journey, you can then hopefully open their mind up and say, well, actually, we've already got something over here that can probably do that. Or there's an alternative that perhaps we're already licensed for that we're just not using yet that you may not be aware of. So identifying what's the scenario they're talking about, what's the business scenario, what's the activity they're trying to enable with the tool. If you have a mature enterprise architecture in the business, sometimes that answer is there already. We enable these activities in the business that handle this information with these tools. So that should then speak to you. And that will also help back up any decision you're making because you're saying, this is what we recognize as our tool set. It's a challenge because, again, if you perhaps are too forceful in that environment, they'll go underground. And they'll just go, oh, okay, well, you're saying no, that's fine. I'll just go and put it on my corporate card. Ching-ching. And suddenly we've got Basecamp and Dropbox and Box.net and something else over here and something else over there and something else over there. All over the place. So it's a challenge, but again, if you have the trust there and they are coming to, well, first of all, that they've come to you is a good sign, because otherwise they would have run off and done it anyway. So it's managing that, but understanding, okay, what are you trying to do? I want to be able to help you here. What are you trying to achieve so we can actually work out what's the best tool that matches what we're trying to do? But it's a very difficult situation. Call your boss.
Any tips on, I guess, how to sell this to an executive that may get it, but not necessarily buy in?
Okay. My team, we go out there and we are talking to a variety of people, and what we find is the discussion we have is normally not with IT. It is with the business. So it's either with the chief operating officer or the head of customer service or the head of sales or this, that, and the other. And we're actually, again, saying, okay, what outcome are you trying to achieve as an organization? Can we actually help you get there quicker, better, more effectively, more efficiently? And most of the time they sit there and go, yes, please, help me. Sometimes, though, they'll say, oh, no, we've got it covered. I've got people. We're all good. If they're the resistor, well, then they probably wouldn't be having that conversation in the first place. So the challenge there is that what we find is this type of stuff resonates with people in the business. They like it when you start talking about what are their challenges and their problems, and when you start listening rather than telling. A classic case I had myself, when I was working with emergency services, I rang up the help desk and I said, okay, I need to get access to someone else's inbox. And they said, no. I said, no, you don't understand. I need to get access to their inbox. No. Policy says no. So I said, okay, I asked a closed question. Let me ask an open question. This staff member over here has gone on leave for 2 weeks. They receive the invoices that are emailed to them, to their inbox, for this subscription which needs to get paid within 7 days, or otherwise half the business doesn't get access to their ISO accredited information. Oh, here's what we can do. We can do an alias, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this. So it's also a question there around, you know, are they asking a closed question, which is, you know, the answer is no, or hold on, what are you trying to achieve? Do the analysis. Understand the problem. And then say, actually, yep, we can do that. We can apply for an exception. We can go through this process to allow you to do that. But that empathy that you can show can pay dividends further down the track because it builds that trust. And then when they do have the problem, they come to you. They don't go to their hip pocket and go, cha-ching. Anyone else? Yes. Secret sauce. No. So what you do is you look for patterns. And those patterns could exist around geography. So you could find that, hold on, all the people in southeast Queensland, we could actually do something for them. But then we could do something, a roadshow up the coast, which could help us with that. And then these people actually come together once a year in this manager's conference. We could actually capture them while they're in the house. So it could be geography. It could be hierarchy in the organization. We might do something different for the senior leaders than we do for the middle managers than we do for staff. It could also be around different business units. Hold on, the logistics division over here will do something very different than we will from the people over here in accounting. So how you slice and dice those groups will depend on the situation. And there's a number of different, I suppose, dimensions that you can look at and how you might plot that. So I suppose the answer is, it depends. Yes?
You spoke a lot about change management to us.
Mm-hmm.
Say I'm a change manager and I'm highly good with champions.
Yep.
Obviously you want to, you know, do get the acronym that
the ad car, yep.
How much do you invite them in though to our point of view and tell them the methodology that we're doing so then they can do that in some minor part to the people that
okay. Are. So it's very important with champions, not just that they get trained in the application that you're launching, the tool. I nearly said solution there. Sorry. That's part of it. That's part of the knowledge they need to do their job. The other part is they need to learn how to manage change. So you do actually need to take them on the journey and say, okay, if you are to influence other people, if you are to address them at a personal level and at a business level, here's what we're doing. Here's how we're doing this. Because that way they can then deal with situations as they come up. Because again, you might say, yep, we're rolling out this program, but they suddenly get a question. And I tell you what, there's nothing worse than the first question that get asked, excuse me, manager, in our team meeting, you're telling us all about this new tool, that's great, fantastic, but is that really right for us? Now, that leader can go a couple of different ways. I'll tell you what, if they go this way, you're in trouble. Look, I don't really know. I've just been told to present these slides. If you want to know more about it, just talk to someone else. But if I've given them enough information and enough skills to say, here's how you deal with those questions, if you can answer the question, answer it confidently. If you can't answer the question, I tell you what, let's bring that up. I'm going to go and do some research and I'll find out and I'll get back to you. But I'm also going to share that with the group. So, you know, how they deal with those questions and when they don't know the answer in particular, how they deal with that, very important. So again, when you are training and coaching champions, they're the skills that they need to have in how to deal with people and how to guide people on that change, their own individual ADCAR journeys, so to speak. I did say journey, sorry. What else? Any other questions? I may have made a request. Thank you. They do have some pipe music they're putting through, but I did ask if a certain exception could be made to that procedure. Anything else? We got. Yep.
So, when your sponsors or your middle management, when they're engaged early on, and they're all gung ho, and then you start actually doing the work,
yep,
and they disappear.
Because there's another bright, shiny thing that's popped up.
Or maybe they're really, really busy.
Yes.
And they're not getting back to it or something.
Yep.
Right. What do you do there? Because then I've had experiences where then IT or PMO will then push that change.
Mm-hmm.
And then the business will be like, oh, well,
the resisting.
PMO's pushing that, the IT's pushing that. They don't make decisions for us.
Yeah. Yep. So it's very important when you do engage those people as sponsors that they understand the commitment that they need to make. And they need to make a commitment. It's not much. It's not, you know, again, it's not usually much. It's just when you get asked a question, answer it positively. And again, if you can't answer, steer them in the right direction. If you see behaviours that are going against, if you actively see, you know, see active resistance going on, know how to deal with that. It's not that you're saying, oh, actually, you're going to need to go on a two-week roadshow around the state, and I need you to be up front or singing and dancing. But hold on, don't you do a roadshow once a year where you get out and talk to your staff? While you're out there, can you also talk about this? So it's understanding the commitment. And again, the commitment isn't saying here's extra work for you to do. It's just saying, while you do your job, make sure you're focusing, you know, you're keeping this front of mind and you're identifying where it's good, reinforce that. Hey, great job, guys, fantastic. You know, if it's a Yammer post in there, like. It's amazing the impact of a like from a senior executive in a business can have on a staff member. I'll tell you that now. And therefore, it's nothing much. But in some cases, yes, they'll go, oh, yeah, I've got other stuff on now. So you might need to bring in some heavy hitters and say, no, no, hold on, we made a commitment to this. If we're going to get through this change, you need to be on board. How can we help you deal with that? In some cases, it might be you're too busy. Right, well, can we actually take some of the other work off your plate and have someone pick that up for you? Because you do need to play this role as a sponsor and as a champion in what we're doing here. So a variety of different activities and different ways that you could help that person fulfill the commitment that they've made. If not, you just say, come on, get on with it. Anything else? People are exiting at a much faster rate. Yes?
How do you try and change a potential sponsor's mind on the way that you deliver the change? So, I've been done it to an organization, say, like, that's who the sponsor would be.
Yep.
And then they say, oh, well, no, let's just do this as an undercover's change. We don't need to bring out any bells and whistles.
Yep.
They lose an opportunity.
Yep. So, they are the expert. No, 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 I've done this before. You know, this is the way I want to do it.
Not necessarily that you think they're an expert or yep. Want to do it.
Okay.
You don't want to create as much fanfare.
Oh, yes. Ribbon cutting. So the scenario you can roll with there is saying, okay, look, let's understand what we actually need to do here. So we do things like we call diagnostics and health checks, where we understand what is the actual, the scope of change that we need to undertake here. And with that evidence, because again, there's some statistical reference you can make there, there's some anecdotal evidence you can bring to the table, you can say, based on this that's come out of there, that says we should be doing things this way. Now, they may say, well, I prefer to do this instead of this, and you might be able to account for some of that, that they want to be seen up in front and ribbon cutting, and I want to be the idol. But hopefully, if you've got that evidence to back you up, then you can say, well, this is the approach we need to take. The evidence is saying we should be doing something, and we can cater for that, and we can do this, but we need to focus also on other people being champions as well, not just you. So a couple of different ways you could approach that through there. Anything else? Going once, twice, three times. Sold. Thank you very much, guys.